usually don't like to wait here for a quorum, if we can at least get the meeting going, with all due respect to the audience and the sponsors of legislation. So having said that, I'd like to call this meeting to order, the House Oil and Gas Committee, 5:06 p.m. on, what is today, Thursday, the 31st of March, day before April Fool's Day. I'm Vic Corin, the chairman of the committee, and with us we have Representatives Gardner and Samuels, the vice chair, and we understand that Curtula is not able to make it today, but Rokeberg is en route, and McGuire is in another committee meeting, and I'm not sure where Dahlstrom is, but I'm sure we'll see a quorum here if we need one to move the bill, if the committee elects to do that. But my understanding is that we're going to just have a presentation, but I'm certainly open to moving it out of committee if that's the wishes of this committee. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to the sponsors. We've got Representatives Hawker and Representatives Berkowitz, who's my personal friend but ideological foe. So, having said that, Ethan, take it away.
Thank you, Representative Corin, and I can only imagine that our opposition has to do with your altitude rather than anything I've actually said or done.
Call us Mutt and Jeff.
I want to thank you and particularly your staff for encouraging me to get this bill in shape for this presentation.
We're not desperate to hear bills. We're just trying to help our friends.
Well, I got to tell you, it's always a surprise when any bill of mine gets scheduled, particularly when it's done without a request. And so we really appreciate this. But what House Bill 224 does is bring up the idea of securitization of oil. Mm-hmm. Oil in particular, but it could be used for gas, and actually if people were to embrace the idea, it could be used for any of the anything that the state sells or gets royalties off of. And it's not a concept that's unfamiliar to this legislature. Just a couple of years ago, after there was the tobacco settlement that resulted in a lot of money coming to the state, we opted to securitize that settlement. That is to take future payments up front in some kind of lump sum and then use an account off of it. And securitization is just the simple concept of taking tomorrow's benefit today. Mm-hmm. Now, some would argue there's a discounting that occurs because you haven't actually received the product, but yet there's others who might suggest it could be a premium price because in the instance of oil, the price is so high today, and there's arguable companies want to book reserves a little bit more, and I would submit too that could bring an element of stability to the industry that everyone seeks, and it's just a straightforward concept of selling tomorrow's goods today.
Okay. We've been joined by Representative Rokeberg. Thank you, Norm, for attending. Appreciate it.
Sure.
We're hearing, of course, House Bill 224 by our friends Hawker and Berkowitz. I want you to know, the sponsors, that we do have Mark Myers from the Division of Oil and Gas, who's been so kind to join us online, and we don't want to put you on in the spot with a whole lot of questions, since this presentation was somewhat prepared without a lot of advance notice. So we'd be happy to direct questions to him if you felt that would be more prudent.
I just point out that there are a lot of resources that discuss what securitization is. There's an article in the Business Lawyer, which is a section of the American Bar Association, a couple of years ago, which directly talked about securitization of oil, gas, and other natural resource assets, and particularly the emerging financing techniques. So this is the idea of securitizing oil revenues has occurred in other places, and to some extent, you could argue that the industry does it in places. And any time, for example, there's a sale of an asset, you know, one company buys another, they're in essence buying all the reserves. So it's a concept people ought to be familiar with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, thank you for making that comment, Representative Berkowitz, as far as it happening elsewhere. Has it happened in other states in the United States? And if so, to what degree of success, if you're familiar with that?
I haven't been able to. Maybe Representative Hawker's heard, but I haven't heard of any other states mm-hmm. that have securitized their oil. But again, Alaska's in a unique position where it is our oil.
Mm-hmm. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the record. Representative Mike Hawker, and apologies for not having my suit coat on. I just was walking down the hall and discovered the meeting.
No problem. Just by accident, right?
Completely. You know, actually, giving kind of credit where credit's due. It's just the brainchild of legislators in this building with sort of financial backgrounds and financial experience talking over how the state might approach you know, ways to, let's say, stabilize our oil and gas revenues, lock in higher prices potentially. Mm-hmm. And in the bill, I just want to emphasize something also, that the bill was crafted to be a permissive bill, not a mandatory bill, mm-hmm. in that it really is simply putting into statute here an authority for us to investigate this further, fully, and, you know, with the appropriate academic resources.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Roper.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is this kind of the Garvey bond of oil type thing where we're trying to create a financial instrument that drives, that generates near-term cash with the risk elements of a long-term instrument?
It could be viewed, through the chair, mm-hmm. it could be viewed that way. You know, when people initially conceptualize of securitization with Alaska's oil, they tend to go to the big picture and imagine we're going to securitize all our royalty. And it doesn't necessarily have to be viewed in that context. You could go field by field, for example. And I think in some of the more marginal fields, securitization might prove to be an interesting way of bringing stability for the producers and also getting the state out of the day-to-day management. And, you know, I hesitate to think that it might avoid some of the problems we've seen around ELF as well.
If I may, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm. Also, yes, please.
As we all know, the Garvey bond is a grant anticipation revenue vehicle. It's where we know that we will receive a federal grant in a fixed dollar amount in the future for a certain project.
Hope.
And it is used to, then by issuing a grant anticipation revenue vehicle, we, you know, out in the open market, somebody loans us money, but it's going to get paid off by the future grant. Two big differences between a grant anticipation revenue vehicle, and this. One is there is no assurance, because of the way government financing works, that the Garvey bond would be met by those grants. It's only you default on the bond if you don't get the grant revenues. So here, where we have a known, we're doing a commodities transaction more than a revenue anticipation transaction. And secondly, with the Garvey, the amount is fixed. You know what your anticipated, you have a very solid estimate of what your anticipated revenue is, and either you're going to get it, it's either going to get that amount or you're not going to get anything if the government chooses not to fund it. And in this case, there is a potential to utilize this, and again, there's a lot of complexities, but potentially as a way to hedge price changes by, again, having to, if it was chosen, if it was decided, one could lock in an unusual high point on a price bubble for market oil prices.
Thank you. Yeah, we got Representative Samuels, then I'll go back to you, Norm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You don't borrow against it at all. You're selling a portion or all of your royalty share. You're selling it in the ground. So whose crystal ball gets used on? You need to sell at 40, but it's either going to be 20 or 80. And who's the genius or who's the goat? I guess is. It's a hedging on fuel. I mean, it's
through the chair, Representative Samuels. In conversations on, you know, ways of doing this, what's been discussed with various industry folks that were expressed some interest in the concept, and where it's been thrown around, it would be actually time limited. So part of it also, this is to, and it would, like you would say, you would securitize the royalties oil for time, certain time frame from a certain, I think a potential conception of a transaction, certain time frame from a certain reserve. Now, someone's paid you for that up front. If they do not develop it, don't produce it, don't get it downstream themselves, it sits in the ground and reverts to the sovereign at the expiration of the securitization term. Because you're not, the idea would not be to create essentially a fee simple transfer of all the reserves and develop it if you want later, if not. But we'd also maintain a time limit, and if it wasn't, whatever could be produced in that time frame.
I'd like to give a note. Our friend Representative Dalton has arrived. Thank you. Thank you, ma'am. Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, a number of questions come to mind, and even the last response comes to mind. I'm rather astounded to think that you're considering developing a financial instrument based on non-produced commodity. Is that what you're suggesting?
Through the chair, one of the greatest magical things about Wall Street, you can create a financial instrument out of anything. And in this case, I would truly expect that the people making the investment would expect to produce. But you know, the point is, if they chose not to produce, the resource would still remain and ultimately revert to the sovereign.
And therefore, there would be actually no revenue derived to pay off the financial instrument or whatever, the derivative or whatever is created.
Just the opposite. We would have our cash in hand up front.
No. The state would benefit. What about the investor?
I mean,
if there's no production.
I mean, I would anticipate, if I could through the chair, I would anticipate, you know, if I wanted to buy one of the, if I wanted to get a securitized interest in something, I would buy from a producing field. I would know that the production rates were at a certain amount over a certain period of time. I'd buy 5 years or 6 years worth of securitized, the amount of royalties, and which I would suggest could possibly be described to include severance tax. And you have a pretty good idea. I mean, we do in our revenue handbooks, we do have a pretty good idea how much oil is going to come out of the ground on each field for a short period of time.
Follow up?
Follow up. Well, I was curious that having looked into this, have you even looked at the history of a security called PBT, or Prudhoe Bay Trust? Is traded on a New York Stock Exchange against Prudhoe Bay Oil. The history and how that's how that was developed. Have you looked into that?
No,
I haven't.
Not at all.
Oh, gentlemen. Mr. Chairman, let me just go back to some of the fundamental things. I'm concerned in considering here. Clearly, when you're going to be creating some kind of financial instrument, you should make assumptions about discounted rates, net present values, and managing risk. How will you propose to develop something like this to manage the upside and the downside risk of this, assuming then if you even had production, not if you were moribund or hoping or praying for production?
If I could, you know, you're contemplating a level of complexity that I don't think necessarily has to be considered. Why do it is what you want to do is if you put something on the market and if you get a high enough bid for it, then you make the transaction. If you don't get a high enough bid, you don't make the transaction.
Well, if you're not going to, at least to a degree, guarantee or make comfortable the amount of recognized realized return by an investor, you're not going to get an investor. To do that, you're going to have to discount the flow that would be derived from the terms of the state arrangement with whoever the producer was.
Right.
You're discounting your future cash flow, and you're giving something up to shift the risk to the investor, right?
If I could, just because Representative Roekberg, you missed the earlier part of my presentation, which wasn't very long, but it was, I think...
But substantive.
But there was a substantive component that I want to remind you about, is that we have used securitization in the past. We securitized the tobacco settlement.
Well, Mr. Chairman, on that point, we certainly did, and I was a leading proponent of that, because that was in the main driven by risk elements, and which have proven to be true retrospectively, that we went into the market, securitized that income stream when we believed there was a potentiality that the income stream would absolutely go away. And we were very fortunate to get some of the highest benefits by being early on. Those types of instruments are no longer even marketable on Wall Street right now. But that was a major driving force behind that decision as a matter of public policy, was to lower the risk to the state of Alaska to that income stream, thereby securitizing it and putting it on the market and shifting the risk to Wall Street. And we did good. Well, I'm not sure that the same scenario here comes into play, particularly if you get in a situation with a commodity that may have an upside potential for raising prices. You're going to be giving it away, and the investor will be betting you're wrong. And that's why you're shifting risk. So then how do you manage that?
We have a question. I'm sorry. Go ahead and respond to that. We have a question from Representative Sanders.
Mr. Chairman, the queries, previous experience, the details being, the alternate scenarios being proposed by Representative Roekberg, are exactly why this bill is written the way it is. Again, this is a permissive bill that allows the best minds in the state to investigate this possibility, and if and only if it has merit, then looking, you know, going forward and proposing a transaction. This is simply grant, you know, and this bill grants authority to look into an alternative in a market that I think, yeah, truly, I believe it merits examination.
Representative Sanders,
thank you
for your patience and waiting.
Thank you. I've got a couple questions on the. So let's assume for a second that Mr. Hurley's employer wants to buy our royalty share. They think the price of oil is going to go to 60. We think it's going to be at 35. So we sell him our royalty share at Liberty, our 12.5%, and Liberty is actually running, but they don't have any share. Are they now a share, an owner in there? And who then determines, would the commissioner have to then determine where it goes? And, you know, it's going to go to Endicott, and then it's going to be problematic with that, and so on, with all of the who gets in and the competition between the companies when you're buying each other's shares that you're now not an owner of currently. How would you anticipate that happening? I mean, I'm assuming that my general premise is correct, that we're going to sell to somebody who thinks it's going to go up and we think it's going to go down, or we just need the cash and they'll discount it and make an offer and you sell it. Generally speaking, that's what you're looking at doing. But have you looked down the road at the practical implications of the various ownership and the competitive factors on the slope?
If I may, through the chair, Representative Samuels, same answer as before. All these details are out there to be examined, considered thoroughly, thoughtfully. This bill authorizes us to pursue that investigation.
Thank you.
Before we continue, I wanted to acknowledge my good friend Jay Ramis in the audience. Jay, you're absolutely welcome to join us here if you'd like. If you're more comfortable back there, that's okay too. I can understand. Yes. Protect you, right? But thank you for joining us. We do appreciate your interest in our committee meetings. Any more questions before we move on to the public hearing, which I can.
Oh, is there other testimony, Mr. Chairman?
Well, there might be. I'm going to ask, and if there isn't, then we'll really expedite this thing. I don't expect there to be anybody, but I wanted to ask anyway. So we'll open up the public hearing. Is there anybody online that wishes to testify other than Mark Myers? I'm not trying to preclude our friend Mark, but we'll get to you, Mark. Anybody online? I don't have a list here of anybody, so I didn't expect anybody. Anybody in the audience from here in Juneau that wished to address the committee on House Bill 224? Well, seeing none, that was easy. The public hearing is closed. However, I would like to go to Mark Myers, who is the Division of Oil and Gas Director. He didn't request to testify, but Mark, we do appreciate your attendance nevertheless, and I'd like to give you an opportunity to address the committee if you choose to do so.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, Mark Myers, Director of Division of Oil and Gas. I also have with me Kurt Gibson, and Kurt has a petroleum engineering background, about 15 years of experience, but importantly, he spent about five years as an energy trader, so he understands hedges and various mechanisms under which both oil and gas are sold. So he's the real expert here. I think as you have gone through the committee debate, there's lots of questions about how you would employ this. In particular, I just want to highlight a couple of issues, and then I actually bring it into Kurt to maybe talk about a couple of the mechanisms that might or might not work here. One of the concerns I would have is that ultimately the state has to recognize it's not the producer, it doesn't ultimately control the rate of production. We have a say in it through our plans of development, but on a day-to-day basis, the operations belong to the producers of that particular field. So if the state were to sell, it doesn't really have the ability to guarantee X amount of barrels on a given day, and that might be a problem in terms of cash flow with someone who has a limited option in time for a volume of oil. Also, under our current requirements for royalty in kind sales, and this would be a type of royalty in kind sale, upstream, obviously in the ground, is a little different than actually selling at pump station one, as we normally do. But we have a requirement to achieve the royalty in value as a benchmark. So it's going to be very hard for us to benchmark when there would be a net benefit to the state, because again, we're not going to be able to predict prices, nor are we going to really know how much of a discount a person is going to have to take in buying the commodity in terms of risking whether he's going to get the full amount of commodity and what the price is. Generally, these types of deals would have to be significantly discounted probably over the expected market value to make sure that your investment was secure. So I do think there's a potential conflict with our physical and economic waste standard. Again, if you have a contract and you're trying to deliver as much coal as you can in a period, it may lead the state to hopefully never be, but could lead the state in a position where it's in conflict on its physical and economic waste standards in terms of the rates of production and the offtake rates of both oil and gas. So just off the cuff, there would be a bunch of issues that would need to be resolved and how these mechanisms would work. With that, I'll go ahead and turn over to Kurt.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The only comment I really have is, you know, Mark covered a lot of the bases, some of the things that were mentioned earlier. The only other comment that I have is there was a lot of discussion about using this, the securitization, as a form of price hedging. And so I guess my question would be, is that the purpose of the bill? And if so, is there another way that we could go about establishing price hedging mechanism without securitization? Because the two really are not necessarily linked.
Mr. Gibson, I'd be happy to defer to the sponsors to answer that question. Would you care to answer
through the chair
to the purpose of the bill?
Through the chair, Mr. Gibson. As far as intent of this bill, no. The intent of this bill is simply to grant the state the authority to investigate the merits or the demerits of this sort of transaction in all of the permutations that it might be constructed, and in any way, if it could be used to provide a more stable, any net benefit. I don't want to put any shading to it, but any benefit to the state of Alaska.
Yes, Representative Berkowitz.
You know, price hedging wasn't what entered my mind when I talked about this with the bright young minds that first sort of brought the thing to my attention. But I just refer everyone to Title 3806.010, which is the purpose section of the Alaska Royalty Oil and Gas Development Advisory Board. And if I could read, it's the purpose of this chapter to facilitate the wise development of Alaska's oil and gas royalty interest by providing means and procedures for sales, exchanges, or other dispositions of those interests in ways calculated to promote private economic growth consistent with applicable environmental standards and public fiscal stability.
What were you referencing again? Ethan, I'd like to write that one down.
Title 3806.010, which is the purpose of the Alaska Royalty Oil and Gas Development Advisory Board. And, you know, it seems to me that there are all kinds of ways you can point out problems with any kind of different way of looking at disposing of a state asset, or relinquishing absolute control over that state asset. But I think if we're to be consistent with exploring the wise development of Alaska's oil and gas royalty interest, we ought to give the Oil and Gas Development Advisory Board the widest latitude possible. And let the people that are trained in this area make a choice and bring those choices to the legislature.
Okay.
I mean, I can conceive of a situation where we could dispose of a considerable amount of our royalty interest for a large sum of money, which would provide, for example, a pot that would be sufficient. The interest, the revenue off of that pot would be sufficient to help bridge the state's fiscal gap. It's conceivable.
I can see this as a tool the state can use for that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
However, I can also foresee the state incurring some major risk, because you really don't know what's in the ground unless you have some very competent people get in there and do some very thorough analyses to see what we really have there. And even then, who knows what's going to ultimately be produced. So it is a risk, obviously.
It is a risk, and yet year after year we see transactions occur in our oil fields. We saw very recently we saw BP purchase ARCO. These interests there are transactions around them. There are lease transactions on a regular basis. So clearly the industry has the means and the ability to make these kind of transactions, to make these assessments, and the state has some understanding of what goes on with those kind of transactions and ought to have as wide latitude as possible to dispose of our interests or to protect our interests. But I think, you know, if you want to look at it another way, we can have a better idea of the value of our property if we contemplate what securitization would bring to us.
Yes, Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I got a question from Mr. Gibson online on the give me an example on the difference between what the hedging would be and the securitization would be. I'm having trouble kind of differentiating the practicality of what actually happens.
Thank you. The primary difference is, I think, that when you contemplate securitization, you're exchanging a series of payments for a single lump sum. But the prospect of hedging price risk simply suggests that you agree on a forward price for a commodity and then continue to receive a series of payments at that price.
So if we don't know what the series of payments is going to be because during the fluctuation of oil prices, the securitization, they give us a lump sum discounted at whatever rate you negotiated out, and then it still fluctuates with the price of the product?
No, I think, let me restate my answer. The key distinction, I think, would be the discount rate.
Okay.
In both cases, you've got a series of payments. When you securitize, you exchange the series of payments for a lump sum. In order to determine what the present value of that series of payments is, you have to establish a discount rate. In either case, you have to establish a forward price. In one case, you're continuing to receive a series of payments, but you've agreed upon a price. You're no longer floating with the market. In the case of securitization, not only are you agreeing on a forward price, you're agreeing on how you're going to discount that price and take it in a single lump sum payment today.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Roquefort?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gibson?
Yes, sir.
I'm not aware, and testimony was that we're not aware of any states done this or any other foreign jurisdiction, but venturing, are you aware of anything like this when your experience as a trader and or just your experience in the financial markets? With this type of a volatile commodity, I mean, what type of a discount rate and how would you build that up under these type of circumstances, together with underwriting costs and other anticipations? It seems to me that there would be extraordinarily high discount rate and the state would be would have to give up substantial amounts of future income, I think. I mean, do you care to even guess at that, or?
I don't think I would be qualified to guess. There's certainly a substantial discount rate that would have to be established to accommodate the volatility, the price volatility. The answer to your original question, however, is no. I'm not familiar with this having taken place in my experience with any sovereign selling its royalty on a securitized arrangement.
Are you aware of any other commodity that's been securitized?
I'm not. But my primary familiarity is with oil, gas, and deregulated power. In those three commodities, my answer would be no. I'm not familiar with this type of an arrangement.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Yes, sir.
You know, and I don't have an exhaustive list, but I've got indication that the Republic of Congo has securitized oil royalties, at least in 1994. There's some indication that Mexico has done it, and I could go through these articles that I have and find some other instances, but these are transactions that have occurred, and mm-hmm. I just found these by doing simple internet searches.
Mm-hmm. Chair Coring here, have you had a chance to interact with the industry to see if they're amenable to this concept? If not, that's okay. We can get that information.
I've had some preliminary conversations with different members of the industry, and I've had comments ranging from why would we trust the state to honor a long-range contract. I've had other indications that they're very intrigued by the prospect. I've had conversations with people from some of the smaller independents who had, in fact, engaged in sort of similar transactions on a private basis. And thought it was an interesting idea that was worth pursuing.
Okay. Thank you. We've been joined by Representative McGuire. Thank you very much, ma'am.
My apologies.
And we understand fully, because we know there's a HESC meeting that overlaps with oil and gas, so not a problem. Representative Roquebrune.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask the sponsor and the co-sponsor both. I mean, it's interesting that this is a very new concept, but seemingly, why did you choose to take this route with introduction of the bill rather than the option of using hedging techniques, something we've discussed in legislature several times over several years? And one can never know when that time may be right to utilize those, which seems to be much easier to facilitate. Yep. Is there a reason that you went this route?
Well, you know, if it through the chair, last year I did sequestration, and this year was securitization, and I'm not sure what I'm going to do next year.
Long
is it alliterative? It has to start with an S?
Long S words.
No, but it has to end in I-O-N.
No, yeah. In all seriousness, the reason I opted for this was that preliminary conversations and preliminary looking at some of the numbers indicated that this was an avenue worth pursuing. And if someone wants to talk about hedging as another alternative, I'm not averse to that. I think the state should have at its disposal every possible tool when it comes time to getting the most value from our resource. And there are different ways of assessing whether we get the most value. And I would argue that we have a constitutional requirement to get maximum value, even if it requires us to make some hard choices and go through some difficult protocols, which is what I hear might be some of the concerns with the securitization.
Sure, if I might follow up, I guess, well then, I don't disagree with your last comment. I mean, I think we do have a responsibility to see what we can do, particularly as a policymaking body of the state, to generate a secure income stream for the constituency and our citizens. But would you consider adopting some type of a studying task force or commission or something to look into this, as well as hedging and other these other issues? It seems to me we've got a pretty what you have in terms of the bill here is a suggestion that we turn over the responsibility to the Royalty Board to make a public policy. I'm not sure that's the right thing we should do statutorily, when in fact this decision should be made in the legislature with due study, research, and so forth. We're good at doing stuff like this, establishing a task force. Maybe you're adverse to that, you know, as a rule, but if this concept has any merit, I think it does deserve further study rather than just devolving our rights to another agency right now. Don't you agree we should look into this a little further, or did you consider that as an alternative?
I haven't had good experience with task forces, for starters.
Or joint committees or things that they perhaps work a little better.
Or perhaps to ask the Commissioner of Natural Resources to do a formal study and dispatch their experts in the industry so we can have a very well qualified.
You know, in some ways, this is written in a permissive way, but I think that because we have this constitutional obligation to get maximum value from our resource, it seems almost incumbent upon the Commissioner of Natural Resources to pursue an investigation of whether securitization does bring maximum benefit to the state from our resources, and plus with all the other ancillary benefits that come from a securitization or other future sale of our assets. And I would almost argue, in fact I am going to argue right now, that I think that if they haven't taken a look at securitization, they've been remiss in their responsibility. And we can look at securitization, we can do it with a task force. I think if you see some of the preliminary numbers that Representative Hawker and I have seen, your eyes might bug out of your head just like ours did when we first saw what some of those numbers could possibly be.
Well, why are you hiding them from us then?
Because they're very preliminary and they're very big.
I don't believe Representative Roquebrune was here when we acknowledged our own surprise at being invited to present this bill.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we hadn't actually asked for a hearing.
But that explains a lot.
But yet we came when summoned.
But through the chair, sir, to Representative Roquebrune.
And I can't even get a hearing until the mother
comes. I would be very happy to sit down and arrange a conversation with folks who have put a lot more, frankly, some very bright young folks in this body that have put a lot of their time and thought into that and brought it to us as legislators to start moving through the process. Be happy to arrange, conversations and give you more, your own more comfort. I'm a little bit I would be uncomfortable presenting it here as a statement of fact, because again, we're looking for permission, authority to pursue this academic venture. I'm just a little hesitant to bring forward information that at best would be begging the answer to the question we're asking.
Mr. Rowe, maybe we should turn it over to ICER with a little fiscal note here or something like that, really. And frankly, I am really much more interested right now in hedging strategies and the potentiality. I have been for a number of years. We had recent conversations, I know many of us did, with UBS in their recent trip up here. And with the greater price structures and the higher volatility that results from that, I think we're in a unique opportunity right now to perhaps take some advantage of that, which doesn't have some of the complexities that I think securitization may have about production values, even creating a new instrument. There's a lot of pitfalls here when we could, right now, almost more immediately with direct authorization, go in the hedging market pretty readily.
But if I could, I think one of the advantages of securitization, particularly if instead of looking at it in a macro sense as considering all of Alaska's oil and gas fields, but if you were to go field by field, securitization might make sense in one field and not make sense in another field. It might provide the kind of stability for an independent that wanted to make an investment that they couldn't find through another structure. It's another option for investment in the state, and it offers the state another way of providing stability. It's not going to necessarily work at all. It's not necessarily going to work in every instance, but it provides another option that might be the catalyst for getting the deal done.
Yes, sir.
And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Through the chair, I don't believe that these financial strategies are mutually exclusive. It is not one or the other. Quite frankly, I think we have an absolute obligation, as mentioned earlier, to pursue all strategies that may benefit the state. And I would personally be very happy to work with you on pursuing a hedging strategy as well as this strategy. I think the more investigation we put on the table, the farther we can take every one of these issues, the more comfortable we can get the public with the state participating in some very sophisticated capital markets. It will be better off in the long run.
For the benefit of the members that arrived after the committee, I had initial remarks indicating that we were going to just have a presentation on the bill and we could hold it over if we had to. However, I'm amenable to moving the bill if that is the wish of the committee. So I just wanted to note that for your benefit. Senator Roper.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I'm not at all comfortable with moving this bill right now because I'm not sure what it really does. It may give the Royalty Board the license to gamble right now. Without a little more oversight and direction from the legislature, I'm not at all comfortable moving along.
We're
certainly happy to give these gentlemen more time to prepare for a committee hearing.
Yeah, absolutely. What about the concept of perhaps making any transaction that the commission may engage in subject to legislative approval that raise your comfort level adequately? Or perhaps making the same subject to an adequate study by whoever we direct to do a study?
If I could, through the chair,
sure.
And to the chair, if there's any sort of long-term sale of more than a single year's worth of royalty, it already does require legislative approval under Title 38. The way this language is written, you arguably could sort of navigate around that requirement, but it'd be my sense if there were a sort of a long-term sale of or more than a single year sale, it would require legislative approval.
Okay. And I assume that when you make reference to commissioner on line 9, you're talking about the DNR commissioner that would sell or securitize the oil. Should we clarify that and amend the bill to note that, or is that just to assume that it would be the DNR commissioner?
I think within the context of Title 38,
right.
It's fairly clear.
Okay, thank you.
But I'm not, as I'm fond of amending bills, I wouldn't amend someone else's list.
Yes. I'm very much aware of that every time you set the rule this morning.
We don't want to do it here. We can do it on the floor.
Yes. Any more questions? What is the intent in the committee? I clearly understand where Norm is coming from. Liesl or Nancy, do you have any thoughts as far
Mr.
as
Chair,
the intent of moving the bill now or holding on to it until we give it further thought, get some more information?
I've done a little bit of research on this previously, and I'm comfortable to move the bill to resources, knowing full well that the chair is sitting here listening to this, and that the makers of the bill mm-hmm. will have, you know, answers mm-hmm. to some of the scenarios that have been presented here, mm-hmm. and be able to go into specifics there. So yeah. I would be comfortable with that. Right.
Liesl, do you have any thoughts on whether we should move it or not today? Or?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, my thought would be that it's got three committees, so if it is going to have any chance at all, if the idea ends up garnering support, we probably should get it moving on its way. And, you know, the good chair of the Resources Committee is sitting here, so. Mm-hmm.
And my
and the bad one, too.
And I think.
And the bad one.
And we won't say which is which.
But I'd like to say that the members of the Oil and Gas Committee would love to be invited into
right.
the unveiling of these
big numbers.
Figures. Mm-hmm. So if we could yes. if we could keep that,
good point.
I say let's move it.
Myrna?
Nick, we.
Yeah, I agree too. We would ask for in the presentation with preparation to some information on hedging as well as securitization. You know, clearly, what the differences are. Yeah, contrast and compare.
Norm, it sounds like you're outgunned here.
Some other things other than the Congo, but.
Well,
they securitized it, took the money, and then nationalized it, and took it back.
I have clear direction, obviously, from my committee members. So with that, unless there's any further comments or questions, I would entertain a motion to move this bill out of committee. Representative Elstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House Bill 224 with individual recommendations. Thank you.
Okay. And we don't have a fiscal note here. We'll just say fiscal note to be produced, I guess. We'll just do it that way, then.
At some point.
And please keep us fully apprised as an Oil and Gas Committee. I'd ask the co-chair of Resources to do that. We'd like to be a continued part of this process.
Invite you to the meeting where the bill is heard.
Representative Hawker?
Sincerely thank you, Mr. Chair of Committee, for moving the bill here, recognizing this, and I would like to emphasize that was brought out here at the end. This is a work in process. It is the three-committee referral. And I can assure you, as one of the guys that sits in that final committee of referral and finance, that no one is harder on his own bills than myself. So.
And gentlemen, thank you very much for presenting the bill to us. We do appreciate it. Representative Rookberg.
Mr. Chairman, I won't object to moving the bill, but I'm going to be signing Do Not Pass for the record.
Okay. I actually failed to ask if there was any objection to moving the bill. I do apologize for being remiss in that. We did have a motion by Representative Dahlstrom, and apparently we have no objection to moving the bill, as she noted, with individual recommendations and accompanying indeterminate, I guess, fiscal note at this point. So with no objection, the bill is moved as noted. Gentlemen, thank you very much for the presentation. I appreciate your time.
Thank you all very much.
Welcome. And with that, I want to note that House Bill 234, in case anybody's wondering if we're going to hear that, we will not hear that bill. We are in the process of gathering more information, so that is suspended indefinitely. So our next meeting is not determined, but we will make that announcement when we have another one scheduled. So at 5:50, we are adjourned. Thank you.